CME Zoom. But now we're back to what we were doing, which is getting ready for the Nishmas Avram's introduction to the laws of medical treatment on Shabbos by doing the background. And then once we've done that, then we'll see the Nishmas Avram's introduction, which will take us to further places. Sorry? That's it. He's got it on his phone. No?
I don't have the link.
Oh, okay. It went out Motzei Shabbos. So if you look there, maybe you'll find it. But the last thing that we were doing was the discussion about use of medicine on Shabbos, exceptions to the decree, where we will allow use of medicine on Shabbos. And what we're up to is the hierarchy of levels of illness, categories of illness, and what we're allowed to do for each of them. So as a basic guideline, before we get into the one by one, I find it useful to think of it this way. The top category of illness is threats to life. Okay? That includes, obviously, pikuach nefesh, which is saving lives, as well as safek pikuach nefesh, where I'm not sure whether somebody is in danger, but I have reason to think that they are in danger. That's my top tier, is threat to life. Your second layer is what we call somebody who is in great pain, right? Great pain, great illness. They're not in any danger. They're going to live forever as far as we're concerned. However, they're in a very difficult situation from a health standpoint. They're uncomfortable, they're sick, they're whatever. And that's called a chole she'ein bo sakana. Okay? They're ill, but they're not dangerously ill. And for such a person, as we'll see, we'll override derabbanans, ideally with a shinui. But we'll talk about, the ins and outs and specifics of that. And that category may include what's called sakanas aver. Sakanas aver meaning a danger of permanent dysfunction for a part of the body. That's sakanas aver. So that, as we'll see, may be included as part of this. And then the lowest of the tiers, of the three tiers, is somebody whose illness doesn't rise to such an extreme level. They're ill or uncomfortable, but they're not sick, and they're certainly far from danger. And there are two layers. One is called miktsas choli, partially ill, and then there's mechush bi'alma. They're uncomfortable. The label that I've actually started to use for it is non-optimal health. So it's not that they're sick. No, it's non-optimal health. That's what it is. They're not sick in any way that halacha is going to recognize. They're just, not in great shape. So those are my basic things, the three tiers of health. Let's start with the most severe. Okay? Pikuach nefesh, we already know, right? You override everything to save lives. Safek pikuach nefesh. So the rule is that we treat, and we already saw this. I don't think I brought it again on the sheet. No, I did. If you look, if you're using the sheet, you want source number 43. So the Mishnah in Maseches Yoma, Perek Ches, that's a chief source for, in general, the rules of overriding Shabbos to save lives. It says there, Hachoshesh bigrono. Somebody has a sore throat of some kind. And clearly, it's not just a basic sore throat. But matilan lo sam besoch piv b'Shabbos. You are allowed to put some medication in the person's mouth on Shabbos. Mipnei shehu safek nefashos, because this was considered to be life and death. I don't know what was going on with this sore throat. It's source number 43 on the sheet. And the rule is, v'chol safek nefashos doche es ha-Shabbos. If you're not sure about saving lives, it overrides Shabbos. If you don't have it, I can give you the link for downloading it again. Oh, you have it. Okay, great. So that's the rule, that safek pikuach nefesh is treated like definite pikuach nefesh. Now, that inevitably leads to a problem, because safek is a very big place, right? I mean, just think about it in terms of COVID, right? So during COVID, you would say that a person who was, I'm just making things up right now, but a person who was 50 years old and in generally good health But got COVID, you could say, like, you know, the first year of the pandemic, you know, plus or minus, that person is in a safi pikuach nefesh situation. It's like pikuach nefesh, and you better do whatever you can to take care of them. A year later, not so much, right? You ask a doctor, can you give me a level of doubt? Like, what's the risk level? So they'll say, I don't know, 1 in 100, 1 in 200, but that's also safek, right? Like, how do you grade safek? How do you grade doubt? So this isn't really an objective thing, because there are degrees of being risk averse. But look what Rosh Shlomo Zalman said in source 44. He says, "U'inyan ikar hadavar manikra safek pikuach nefesh umalo." He says, regarding the essential matter of what we call safek pikuach nefesh and what does not rise to that level. V'ad efo hu ha'gavul, and where exactly is the boundary? Gam anochi be'onyi histapakti tuva bazeh. He says, yeah, you know what? That's a good question. I don't know either. Ella shemitzad hasvara nira lefiyani yazdaiti. D'chol shederech rov b'nei adam livroach mizeh kiboreach m'pnei asakana, hareza chashiv kesafi pikuach nefesh. He says, logically, anything that people would avoid as this is dangerous, that's considered safi pikuach nefesh. V'karinam be'bechi agavna v'chai bohem v'lo sheyamos bohem. And then we say, live by them and don't die by them. Avalim ein rov b'nei adam nivhalim u'mefachdim mizeh. But most people would not be scared of such a thing. Ein zeh chashiv sakana. That's not called danger. That's the system. And this is actually a standard that is very popular in different areas of halacha. So Schechter uses this in end-of-life cases to talk about the ability of a person halachically to decline care. He says, if it's something that you were to poll people, not Jewish people, just generally, like, would they want to go through a particular treatment, or would they just say, given that fact pattern, you know, that's too much, I don't want to do that. If your average normal person would say they don't want it, then a person is halachically entitled to decline. And I've asked specific practical questions to Rav Schechter, like, even for the most basic types of treatment, like, you know, food, oxygen, whatever, he says, no, they're entitled to decline. It's based on the Gemara and Bava Kamma, not for right now. But my point is that this idea of polling the masses, you know, what would most people view, that actually has, you know, halachic weight in this and other areas of halacha. So that's what Rosh Shlomo Zalman says. Now, that makes this really hard to evaluate, right? What do I do? You know, I think that COVID is really dangerous. So now you're telling me that, you know, snap of a finger, and now it's pikuach nefesh because that's what I think? It's very subjective. People don't like that. Nonetheless, it's true. That's exactly the way it works. It really is the way that the person... Obviously, if a person is completely uneducated about things and their opinion is just, you know, formed by something they heard 10 years ago or not even that, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But the basics of it is that it is for people to make that kind of call and say, I'm really scared. This is a dangerous situation. However, very important to understand that there are actually two categories of safek. When we talk about safek pikuach nefesh overriding Shabbos, two kinds of safek. The one that we've talked about until now is the basic kind of safek, which is, I am not sure whether this person is in danger. The alternative version of safek is, I'm not sure this treatment is actually the right treatment. I'm not sure this is actually going to work. So let's say you have someone who says, there is a treatment we could employ for this person. This person is in a life or death situation. It's a given. This person is in a life or death situation. So someone says, well, what if we try X? And X treatment requires violating Shabbos in order to obtain it, in order to use it, or whatever it is. And you say, well, that's an off-label use. It's never been tried. Like, why would we try that? And they say, well, maybe it'll work. We're in a desperate situation, so maybe we should try it. So there we don't say, safek pikuach nefesh equals pikuach nefesh. You need a substantive reason to think that it's actually going to be effective. If you take a look on the sheet at source number 45 from the Shulchan Aruch, This is talking first about Safek Pikuach Nefesh, the first variety, where we're not sure that it's really that dangerous. So he says, V'im rofei echad omer tzarech, if one doctor says that, yes, we need to act, V'rofei echad omer eno tzarech, another doctor says, nah, they'll be fine. Mechalin, we violate Shabbos. V'yesh misha omer she'ein tzarech mumche, and some say you don't need an expert even. D'chol b'nei adam chashuvim mumchen k'tzas. Because everybody is considered somewhat of an expert. Everybody considers themselves somewhat of an expert. He says, "Safek nefashos lahakel." Therefore, yeah, no, we would be willing to take anybody's word into consideration. When I teach this at Stern, right, they are always very confused by this point, the fact that it really is like the patient's. At the end of the day, it's the patient's word and the patient's responsibility. But that's the way all of halacha works. Right, like we talk about issues like hefsed merubah. If someone's going to suffer a great loss, then we have certain leniencies. Who evaluates what a great loss is? It's based on the person. It's based on their finances and their evaluation. On many areas of halacha, it's really, you know, the person on the spot who has to make a decision. They may say, "Well, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to go to the rabbi and ask the rabbi." But it's really, you know, their call. And that's what we end up saying in terms of medical halacha. You have to be able to evaluate and say, this is what I need to do. And we'll see that. We're going to see that more explicitly as we go along. But going back to the other kind of a safek, the safek of, I don't know that this is the right treatment. So we have a Mishnah in Source 46. It's part of that same Mishnah that I brought you in Source 43. Not dealing with Shabbos, but dealing with treif. There was a treatment in the time of the Mishnah for a bite from a rabid dog. Inevitably, when you read this, you think, oh, wow, Louis Pasteur, germ theory, vaccines, whether it is or isn't. But the Mishnah says, Misha nashcho kelev shote, someone is bitten by a rabid dog. Ein ma'achilin osa mechatzar kaved shalo. We don't feed him from the dog's liver. Rabbi Masya ben Charash matir. Rabbi Masya ben Charash says, no, you are allowed to. Now, why wouldn't we use a dog's liver?
You mean that dog's liver? Not any dog.
From that dog's liver. From that dog, correct.
But generally, it was an assumed healing power that a dog's liver had.
Okay.
That appears in the Gemara.
I mean, they're talking, this is the Mishnah.
But we don't, the question is, can we not use this one because this dog is rabid?
Their treatment is this dog's liver specifically. Like, they thought this dog's liver is what's going to heal. I don't think it's about, like, we would use anyone, but this one, we're not so sure. The issue here is treif. So if you look at Rashi on the Mishnah in Source 47, Ein ma'achilin mechatzar kaved shalo, ve'av al bishano agin arofen berefuazu, even though doctors do this, this isn't like a full-blown cure, such that we would say this is like prescribing penicillin. Like, it's not. It's a dog's liver, and it's a rabid dog's liver. So we don't have that level of confidence, and therefore we're not willing to say safek pikuach nefesh equals pikuach nefesh for this to work. We require an expert's certification. I brought you in 48 from the Magen Avram. He says, "Bo'inon shete refua yedua o alpi mumcha." Either it has to be a medicine that is known to be effective, so everybody knows this is what you use, or an expert said this is what you should use. So since I know this is an expert, okay, even if I'm not familiar with the medication, I'm familiar with the expert. The expert says use it, so I'll use it. But you require that.
I just want to make sure I understand this type of stuff. I guess if you don't use the medicine, there's a chance the patient could die?
This is a pikuach nefesh case.
So the alternate is he could die if we don't try it.
Right. However, this is a medicine which comes at a cost in the sense that you're overriding halacha for it. So what we're saying is we're not going to give him random things that involve violating Yisurim. Like, he's going to spend his last hours on earth violating Yisurim for no reason. If we thought that it was really going to be successful, if it was a known cure, that would be a different story. You know, one of the issues that we're going to get to, not in this, but eventually in the Nishmas Avram, I think, is the discussion that we have regarding where a patient says that certain things are necessary. We have a principle in medical halacha, lev yodea maras nafsho, that people know the bitterness of their own spirit. Right? That's literal. People know the bitterness of their own spirit. And on that basis, we're willing to trust people. If they say, like on Yom Kippur, they say, I need to eat, that's good enough. Even if the doctor says, you don't need to eat. If they say, I need to eat and I'm in danger if I don't eat, we trust them. So then the question becomes, okay, so if the patient says to you, I need penicillin, and you look at the patient and say, why? You're bleeding from your foot. What is penicillin about? Like, what is... Yeah, exactly. The patient says, I need penicillin. Okay, but we don't give them penicillin. We don't say, lev yodei amaras nafsho, for something that's just absurd. So there are limits to saying, well, we're just going to give them everything. That we don't do. Someone put a note in the chat, this isn't for tonight, but what if the medication carries a high risk of harm, even death? You're correct. It's not for tonight, but it's but that is a much discussed thing in terms of the question of do we compel someone to try a treatment which carries risks of harm? Short answer is no. But there is what to discuss in that. Yes, Rabbi Hachman.
Alternative to that same question, not do we compel, but would we permit that there's no cause,
yes,
potentially, so but there's a small chance that it can heal me, maybe I'm willing to take that risk. That's also a question.
Right. The question from in the added point from in the room is, would you be allowed to use a treatment that that came with that level of risk? We're not saying, just go back for a second to Dina's point, we're not saying that the treatment has to be known to be 100% effective. That's not the way medicine works. But it has to be something which we have a good reason to think that this would work. We have some kind of logic. We have some level of experience with it. You have to have something to work with. That leads into a whole other discussion of how we test medications, but that really is beyond the scope right now.
Because I was going to ask like experimental, where let's say it's not here, and I had like let's say it's a rare cancer, and so there's not. They've tried everything they can here. What's FDA approved? But there's something in Europe,
right,
that's available.
Right. So those are fun discussions, not for tonight, but those are fun discussions. It's true. So that is top tier. That's life and death. Pikuach nefesh, savei pikuach nefesh. We move from that into the second level down, the person who's in a lot of pain, and specifically the case that the category that we call cholish embo sakana. But before we get to cholish embo sakana, I'm going to do sakanas aver, okay? Danger to a part of the body. Now, the word aver does not have a translation in English. Any translation you've ever seen is wrong. It's not a translation. Aver is a technical term in Hebrew, which doesn't have an analog in English. What you will sometimes see is people say organ or limb. Right? But skin is an organ. Skin is not an aver, as an example. Bones are avarim. Bones are not organs. It doesn't fit with anything. I think I brought you on the sheet. Yeah, I did. Source number 49 on the sheet is the Mishnah in the first parak of Ahalos, which gives us a list of the 248 avarim of the male body. And it's specifically of the male. Females have a different number. And we're not going through the entire Mishnah. I didn't even bother to translate it. But if you just look at it quickly, it says there are 30 avarim in the foot, 6 in each toe, 10 in the karsol, in the heel, associated with our parsha, shnayim bashok, 2 in the calf, 5 in the arkuba, in the knee area, 1 in the thigh, you know, and then you work your way up. And of course, it's double because you have left side and you have the right side. 11 ribs, you have 30 in the hand, 6 for each finger. Yeah, it's clear this is not organs and this is not limbs. It's aver, and that's what it is. It's a body part. However, from a halachic perspective, it's really irrelevant. Because when we use the term sakanas aver, Rav Wasner believes that aver means one of the 248 that's listed in this Mishnah, but I haven't found any other posek who thought that was the case. Instead, the view that you see everywhere, and Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa brings it, and the Nishmas Avram brings it, is source number 50. This is actually the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa quoted in the Nishmas Avram, because Nishmas Avram's Rebbe was Rav Neuvert, author of Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. So he says, V'yesh makom lomar, Shasakanas Ever Ein Zo Rak Be Ever Adam Meramach Evarim Shebo. He says there's room to say danger to an Ever does not mean one of the 248. Ela Kochelek Misuyam Shel Guf Ha Adam, but any unique portion, or distinct, actually, I like what I did there, distinct portion of the body, Asher im lo yitaplu bo ko'es, which, if not treated right now, yesh chashash sheyetze mipu'ulaso. There's concern that it could not, you know, it could cease to function. Gam ze nikra b'shem sakonas eiver. That is also sakonas eiver. It does not need to be one of those on the list. But any distinct part of the body that could stop functioning permanently as it normally does. That's danger to an eiver. So the question is, how do I view this in halacha? Do I view this as being like pikuach nefesh? Well, it's not. Assuming that the person's, right, their life is not in danger. That's a given. We'll talk more about that because most sakanas eiver cases are pikuach nefesh. So we have to come back to that. But it's not in and of itself pikuach nefesh. Is it chole she'en bo sakana, someone who's ill but not dangerously so? Maybe. So we point to a Gemara in source 51. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Chav Ches Amud Beis. Amar of Zutra Bartuvia Amar Rav. Ayin Shemarda Mutter Lekochla B'Shabbos. The Gemara here says, Rav says, if an eye revolts, you are allowed to treat it with kachol, which is an ointment, on Shabbos. Now, just to know, in general, well, actually, no, it won't make any sense until you see the whole Gemara. So let's read the Gemara first. Savor mina, hani milihu deshachki saman in meyesmol, avo mishchak b'shabbos v'asuyi derech shus harabim lo. I would have thought, when you say I'm allowed to treat someone's eye on Shabbos if it is revolting, unclear what revolting means, different explanations that we've shown him, ranging from bulging out to tearing uncontrollably. But the point is, you say you're allowed to treat it with ointment. I would have assumed that means you're overriding the decree against medication on Shabbos, but it was ground up before Shabbos. You're not violating Deoraisas. You already have it. You're not carrying it through a Rishos Harabim on Shabbos. That would have been my assumption. Amar lehahu me Rabbanon, v'Rabbi Yaakov Shmei, but one of the rabbis named Rabbi Yaakov said, Ledidi mifresha minei de Rav Yehuda. I learned explicitly from Rav Yehuda. Afilu mishchak b'Shabbos v'asuye derech rishus harabim mutter. You are even allowed to grind it up on Shabbos and bring it through a rishus harabim. Wow. My time, or why? Deshuraini de'ena be'uvnesa de'liba talu. Because I translated it based on something I'll explain in a minute. Because the nerves of the eye are linked to the fat around the heart. Any of the medical professionals here can explain the oculocardiac reflex? Someone? No? Well, you should look on Wikipedia. Source of all information. There was an article in 1975 by Dr. Yaakov Levy in the journal Hama'ayan, in which he suggested an interesting explanation for what this is all about. What's this business of the eye connected to the heart? We know what the vagus nerve is, right? You have this long, long nerve that goes to all sorts of places within the body. So apparently, there are nerve endings near the eye, and there are nerves of the vagus nerve that are by the heart. And apparently, when you apply pressure to a person's eyeball, or the muscles around the eye, you can actually cause the heart rate to drop. Yes. Right, no, this was not meant to be used in anything other than therapeutic ways. Let's be clear. Dr. Coppell is worried about what we're creating here. So this Dr. Levy, who wrote the article, contended that maybe that's what the Gemara has in mind when it says that the eye is linked to the heart, and therefore there's some kind of danger if you don't treat the eye with this kol. So the thing is, there are two ways to read this permission to do de'oraisas on Shabbos. Approach number one says this is danger to the eye. It is a case of sakonas eiver. However, it could lead to danger to the body as a whole. And so the argument could go, and this is brought by Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in Source 52, that maybe Sakanas Eiver is to be viewed like Pikuach Nefesh, automatically, because you don't know where it could lead. If you take a look, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in 52, he says, D'mashenemar ba'ayin, that which is said regarding the eye, yesh lomar b'sha'ar eivarim, you should say it for other eivarim as well, d'talu b'yachadim eivar shachiyus talu bo, because they are connected to parts of the body on which life depends. V'kevin d'safek nefashos doche Shabbos, and since when you're not sure about a threat to life, you override Shabbos, imke mechol sakonas eivar tzvichin lahatim b'safek. So anytime there's a danger to a body part, we should now say we will override Shabbos out of doubt. According to this view, we permit the oraisas for any sakanas eiver. Sakanas eiver really should be with pikuach nefesh, safi pikuach nefesh, in that tier. That's where sakanas eiver belongs. And the Meiri brings this idea in Source 53, to suggest that that's the level of it.
Not because of the loss of eiver, but because the eiver may be connected to a real pikuach nefesh.
Correct. And that's why Rabbi Yaakov explained the unique risk for the eyes, right? And the Meiri goes into this. To say that loss, as I wrote in my translation, loss due to danger to an Eiver is common. That's one approach. So Sakanas Eiver is treated like Pikuach Nefesh. That's not the winning approach. It's an approach. Approach number two says no. Sakanas Eiver as a general rule is like somebody who's in great pain. So they stand to lose an ear. That qualifies as, you know, great pain. But it's not automatically a pikuach nefesh case. The case of the eyes and the heart was unique because they knew, yes, there's a danger here. This is not, in other words, source number 51, the Gemara Avodah Zarah, is not a sakanas eiver case at all. It's a pikuach nefesh case. Don't use that as a basis for what we would do in a case of some other sakanas eiver. That's the idea. So then how do I treat sakanas eiver? So take a look at source 54 from Rav Rafal Epers, as it's written in Hebrew, or Evers, as it's translated in English. In his sefer Veshava Rafalo, he says, "V'nira lefinu yas daiti beir hadavar degabe chole she'ein bo sakana." Hatzar hu zmani v'cholef ve'over la'achar zman. He says, sakanas eiver and cholesh en bo sakana aren't the same. Because cholesh en bo sakana, like I explained, somebody who's ill, but not dangerously so. So if you wait long enough, they'll get better. Right? They'll recover from it. They're not in any danger. It's a temporary condition. Barafua hu kidei lahatzilo mizeh. The cure you want to give him is that he doesn't have to suffer this way. But they didn't permit violating a derabanan, right? You have to do derabanan with a shinoi. I mean, there's more to discuss about that. But when you're dealing with sakanas eiver, hachisaron ye olamit, he says, that is going to be a permanent loss. And when he says in parentheses, at least with an adult, it's because he's talking about teeth in context. So he's distinguishing baby teeth and adult teeth. V'yishaer bal mum le'olam b'li ha'refuah, he will be defective, right, without having any sort of treatment for this. Alkeni tiru shvus al-yidei Yisrael la'tzilo mizeh. So they allowed a shvus, right, a derabanan, by a Jew in order to save him. So what we're seeing here is, it's in cholesh she'ein bo sakana territory, but it's more serious than cholesh she'ein bo sakana, because of the permanent nature of the loss. So what we're saying right now is that according to that view, we will only permit deoraisas for the eye case, but not for other cases. And that's the position of the Rosh in source 55. He takes that view. It is the position of the Ran in source 56. He takes that view. Don't extrapolate from the case of the eye. So what is it that I'm allowed to do? Well, as I brought you in number 57 from the Gemara in Ksuvos, which we're going to come back to at some point, Makom Tzara lo gazru rabbanon. The derabbanons were not created for this, you know, situation of pain. In practice, when we're dealing with sakanas eiver, So we follow the view to permit derabanans. We treat it like chol she'ein bo sakana, but more robustly. Because as again, with chol she'ein bo sakana, we're going to prefer a shinui. We're not going to require a shinui here. However, a very important caveat, I hinted to this before, but now you'll see it straight out. Rabbi Elazar Melamed, in source 58, based on medical advice, he says, Lemaisa, das harof im kayom, she'en kim'at matzav shesakonas ever lo tagia lesakonas nefashos al yedei har ala uchdome. He says, the view of doctors today is that it would be pretty unusual that a sakonas ever would not lead to danger to the entire body, if only through infection. Right? Somebody loses an ear, you got to do something. Whether it's a threat of bleeding or whether it's a threat of infection, you can't just say, we'll give them some medicine to feel better. That's not the way it works. So in practice, this isn't changing the rules of Sakanas Eiver. It's just saying, but you should know that your Sakanas Eiver case may actually be Pikuach Nefesh. That's really what we're trying to say here. Now, it depends a little bit on how far you go with Eiver, with definition of Eiver. So, for example, we're not going to see this now, but it will come up in the Nishmas Avram. If someone loses a tooth, is that called Sakanas Eiver? Right? You know that if a tooth is lost, you can hold it in place. If it's within 24 hours, you can actually hold it in place, and then eventually you'll be able to get it to take. There's more to it than that, but I'm not a dentist. But the question now is, will you say that this is called Sakanas Eiver because they're going to lose a tooth? It's machlokes. The question is a tooth called an Eiver? Is it the jaw that's called the Eiver? Yeah, and there's a lot more to say about that. But the bottom line for our purposes is that Sakanas Eiver, you have to know that it's really only just Sakanas Eiver. If you do, then it's in the second tier, not in tier one. You're allowed to do derabanans for it. Someone has a note in the chat. What is dangerous condition depends on patient characteristics. Absolutely true. That goes back to what we had said. I don't know if you were on the Zoom at that point about Safek Pikuach Nefesh and COVID for different people with different conditions in different, at different times in the pandemic. Yeah. Different countries. Okay. So that's, but that's Sakanas Eiver. The next category down is Chol She'ein Bo Sakana. Are we good? Okay. Everyone online good? Okay. So Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, sometimes people misunderstand that term. They think Chol She'ein Bo Sakana means, they're not really sick. Because you just said, Ein Bo Sakana, there's no danger. But the emphasis is on the word Chola. This is somebody who is really sick, and we're going to give criteria for that. They're just not in danger of losing their life. So I don't have v'chai bohem as a justification for overriding Shabbos, but they're in great pain, which can override the Rabbanans. And we'll have to talk about how. So there are a couple of precedents in the Gemara that I'm going to invoke. There are three, but I'm only going to do two of them because the third one will get confusing. But there are a few precedents in the Gemara for overriding halacha on behalf of someone who is ill, even though there's no threat to life. If you take a look on the sheet, it's source 59. Gorin Shabbos Kuf Chavtes. Talking about a woman who is within 30 days of having given birth. She's after the first 7 days, but within the first 30. So Shloshim, within the 30... Afilu amrat sricha ani ein machal in aleha sashabas. Even if she says, I need treatment, meaning I need you to not just treat me, but I need you to violate Shabbos for me, we will not override Shabbos on a deoraisa level. Aval osin al yedei aramoi, but we would tell a non-Jew, which is prohibited rabbinically, but that I'll do. Rav Ula b'Rav Rav Eloi, like Rav Ula said, quoting Rav Ula, the son of Rav Eloi, said, sorry, Damar kol tzarche chole nasin al yedei aramoi b'Shabbos, he says, for a chole, by which he means chole she'en bo sakana, you are allowed to get a non-Jew to do things on Shabbos, uchad Rav Hamnuna, and as Rav Hamnuna taught, He said, Davar Shein Bo Sakana, Omer L'Nachri V'Yosef. There's no danger involved. Tell a non-Jew and the non-Jew will do it. So this is a precedent for Chola Shein Bo Sakana. Got it? That's a clear-cut precedent. The other precedent is the Gemara in Ksuvos in source 60, which was the one I was drawing on in 57. Tanya, Braisa says, in order to explain this, I need to explain two things. Number one, there's a malacha of dash. Dash means threshing, like when you're processing grain. So you need to break up the grain in order to get at the kernel that's inside. So that's the process of threshing. We use the term dash to apply not only to threshing grain, but anytime you're breaking up a surface in order to get at what you really need, that is below. Okay, that's, you need to know that in order to follow this. The other thing is the concept of shinui, doing something in an unusual, doing a malacha in an unusual way, will take it down from a delraisa to a derabanan. So both of those are relevant here. Rabbi Marinus Omer, Rabbi Marinus said, goneach, you have somebody who is groaning, and the groaning isn't something in and of itself. It means there's some level of illness here, but not a life or death case. Yonek chalav b'shabbos. So he's able to nurse milk from an animal on Shabbos. Even though that is dash, because in order to draw the milk out, the act that you have to do to the udder is an act of dash, breaking up the surface in order to get the milk out. Nonetheless, that's allowed for this person. My time or why? Yonek mefarek kila achar yad. Because that breaking apart is with a shinoi, that's in an unusual way. And it's a case of pain, so the rabbis did not prohibit it. And that's what Rabbi Yosef says, halacha kerabi marinus. So I am allowed to override a derabanan on Shabbos for the sake of this person who is goneach. That's the idea. So far, so good?
With a shinoi.
Well, it is a shinoi, correct. With a shinoi. The shinoi is what makes it derabanan.
Okay, right.
Yeah. But the Rush says, that's really nice, but not so fast. Not so fast at all. Why? Because there are two other precedents that can create problems. Source number 61, Mishnah and Erevin. Machzirin retia b'mikdash avalo b'medina. The rule is that when a Kohen does the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, he's not allowed to have anything separating his hand and the vessel that he's holding to do the avoda. Any chatzitza is no good. So what does he do if he has a bandage on his hand? He's going to have to remove the bandage. However, if it's Shabbos when he's doing the avoda, then you have a problem because he's not allowed to put on a bandage on Shabbos. We're not dealing here with a smearing issue or a cutting of the bandage issue. It's all pre-cut, and that's not our problem. But our problem is there's a decree against medicine on Shabbos, like we talked about last time. So therefore, there's a rabbinic decree against putting a bandage on Shabbos, even where there's no smearing issue or anything else. So they said, in the Beis HaMikdash, if you take off a bandage, we will allow you to put it back on. That we're okay with you doing in the Beis HaMikdash. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, of Aloba Medina, outside the Beis HaMikdash, we're not going to allow you to do it. We're not letting you do that outside. We want you to do it inside, but not outside. That's the idea. Now, again, here, there's a whole thing. Like the Gemara said, I need to do the Gemara's line also in 61. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ritiya Shapir Shamel Gabe Mako, if you didn't remove the bandage, it fell off on its own. So in that case, Machzirin B'Shabbos, you were allowed to put it back on, even outside the Beis HaMikdash. That's not under the Gzera. Rashi says it's not under the Gzera because it's an unusual event. Tosa says because you ground up all the stuff yesterday, so therefore there's no reason for the gezerah. It was already pre-ground yesterday. That's its own discussion, which we talked about last time. So here's the big question. If you're going to tell me, ask the Rush. He says, if you're telling me that we override the Rabbanans for a chol ha'shein bo sakana, right? Why isn't this person with the wound a chol ha'shein bo sakana? And therefore I'm allowed to put the bandage back on. That's his question. You just told me, because of the case of the woman who gave birth, and because of Rabbi Marinus and the guy who's groaning, right, that I can override the Rabbanans for Chol Hashem Bo Sakana. So I should also be able to put the bandage back on. Why not? That's one question of the Rush. And then the other one is source number 62. Amemer shari lemikchol eina minochri b'shabsa. Amemer said, if you have an eye problem on Shabbos, you could have a non-Jew apply kachol, this ointment, to the eye. Some said Amemer actually did this himself. And Amar le Rav Ashi la Amemer, Rav Ashi says to Amemer, "My daitach, what's your reasoning? Is it because we've learned that any of the needs of a patient you can do via non-Jew on Shabbos?" And Rav Hamnuna said, right, this is all lifted from source number 59, that that if there's no danger, you tell a non-Jew to do it. That's if you're not assisting. You, on the other end, are helping. You're helping the non-Jew. You squeeze your eye, you hold it a certain way, you are engaged in the act. So Amar Lei, Iker Azvid, the Koy Kavasach, he said, yeah, Rizvid agrees with you. But my answer to Rizvid is that this kind of assistance is not considered substantive. But says the Rush, again, I don't understand. You're only allowing having a non-Jew do it. But what's the malacha involved in applying kol to the eye? It's a derabbanan in of itself. It's just the gezerah of medication. It should be overridden for chol hashem bo sakana. So I have two cases. I have Rabbi Marinus, the groaner, right? Not him personally, but talking about the groaner. And I have the woman who gave birth, which indicate I do override their abundance for chol hashem bo sakana. And then on the other hand, I have this case of the eye ointment, and I have the case of the bandage, which do not override the derabbanan. So what do I do? So the Rush's answer is in source 63. The Rush says not all derabbanans are created equal. He says, v'lo shanilan bein shvusta isbe maisa l'shvusta les be maisa. There's no difference between a dirabanan which involves actions and one which does not, meaning amira la'akum, telling a non-Jew, right? There's no action involved, it's just speech. Oshema ika lafaluge ben chisaron ever lacholesh embo sakana. Maybe we should distinguish between loss of a body part and cholesh embo sakana. I'm not going to go into it inside because it's going to take me too much time to do the inside. But the upshot of it is, he says, maybe we permit Amir La'akum for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, but we don't permit all the Rabbanans for Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. So the case of the woman who gave birth in the last 30 days will permit you to have a non-Jew be the one. But maybe not other things. Now, that isn't going to work necessarily. That isn't going to work for all. It won't work for all of our cases. He also acknowledges that maybe the answer is actually that the case in Erevin with the bandage is not a chol hashem bo sakana. Like maybe the answer is the bandage case is a lesser case, and he doesn't even bring the Gemara in Beitza about the eye. So maybe that's the answer. Maybe these are more severe and these are less severe. So that we've shown him go in different ways with this, and this is really important. This is a little more detail than I would otherwise go into, but it's vital in understanding where we're going to go la halacha with a chol hashem bo sakana. So hopefully we can understand what we're saying here. I'm only bringing you two paths. There are more than two paths, but I'm bringing just two. Path number one is the Rambam's path. The Rambam, as understood by the Tur, because there are those who read the Rambam differently. Take a look at source 64. He says, Chol she'ein bo sakana osin lo kol tzrachav al yedei goy. The Rambam writes, Chol she'ein bo sakana, you get a non-Jew to help. Ketzad, how? Omer l'goy la'asos lo b'hu osa. You tell the non-Jew to do what he does. Levasha lo, to cook. Lafos, to bake. And by the way, yes, we override bishol akum, pas akum, whatever, for this as well. And if they need things that don't involve malacha, then a Jew can do it, meaning a derabanan. So what the Rambam seems to be saying, and this is the way the Tur explains the Rambam, is that all derabanans are allowed for a chol she'ein bo sakana. Not only telling a non-Jew, but also you yourself are able to do it. Again, the Magid Mishnah and the Beis Yosef read the Rambam differently, but that's the way the Tur reads the Rambam. That's also the way the Rashba says it. Okay, so this is one view. Cholesh ein bo sakana, I have a problem. I've got these gemaras here. I've got these gemaras here. The Rambam's conclusion is, you can do derabbanans for cholesh ein bo sakana. We have to deal with the Beitza case, the Erevin case, with the bandage, whatever. But that's the rule. The Ramban says no. Not true. Says the Ramban, if you look at source number 65. He says, v'hachin peruka demilsa. This is the explanation of the issue. And this is from his Torah Sa'adam, which is very, very important to know about in terms of medical halacha. The Ramban writes a Sefer Halacha called Taras HaAdam, which gives us the laws of Bikur Cholim, and then the laws of when someone is being treated, and then the laws of bereavement and Avelus and all of that, and then he ends with Shar HaGemul on reward and punishment. People who learn Shulchan Aruch, Yerideya, often remark on the odd order that he has at the end of Yerideya, where he does this Bikur Cholim, and then death and Avelus. But that's why he's lifting the order out of the Ramban. And the Ramban, this is a very important work of medical halacha. So so what does Ramban have to say? I see the note in the chat. I come back to it. He says, V'hachin peruka demilsa. This is the explanation. Mechush sha'adam chola mimenu v'nofa l'mishka ve'in bo sakana. If somebody has a condition where they are ill, ignore the word mechush there. That's a misleading word. It's not going to help us, so just pretend it's not there. If somebody is ill and bedridden and not in danger, he tiru bo shavus she'ein bo maisa. This is like what we saw in the rush. We allow him to, we allow to do a derabanan, it's called a shavus, if there's no deed involved. What does that mean, a derabanan without a deed? Amir Lagoy telling a non-Jew. V'chein hitiru bo shvus de malacha hanaseis b'shinui. And they will also allow a shvus, something that's rabbinically prohibited, if it's done with a shinui. So it's a double derabanan. It has to be something that's only prohibited rabbinically in the first place, and you're going to do it in an unusual way. That's what Ramban wants. He says, "Vizeu she'amru davar she'en bo sakana omer l'goy va'osa." That's what we meant when we said, if it's not in danger, you tell an non-Jew and he does it. Va'amru le'inyan chaya kolamed, and they said for a woman who gave birth in that 30-day period, afilu amra tzvicha ani ein machal in alas haShabbos ela osin la'idei goy b'Shabbos. You don't violate Shabbos for her. You tell an non-Jew. Vizeu da'ameimar kachal migoy, and that's why Ameimar got the ointment from somebody who wasn't Jewish. And va'aminanami mefarik kila achar yadhu, and also this business of nursing on Shabbos, it's mefarik with a shinoi, u'makom tzara lo gazu rabbanon, and the rabbis did not prohibit it because of a case of pain. B'mnei she nasin b'shinoi shelo kederach hamalachos, it's being done in an unusual way. The Ramban here seems to be saying that the nursing case is a derabbanan in and of itself before you even get to the shinui, which is unclear, but that's what he seems to be saying. And the Ran takes this view also. So what you end up with is a major dispute. The Rambam says, Cholesh ein bo sakana, you do a derabbanan. Ramban says, do a derabbanan with a shinui. Or, amir la'akum, tell a non-Jew to do it. So what do we do? So the best is clearly amir la'akum. Get a non-Jew to be the one to do whatever it is that needs doing. That would be our preference. I brought it for you in the Mishnah Berurah in Source 66. He says, "Becholah sheyesh bo sakana." If somebody is dangerously ill, but kol shaboru she'im b'minias oso davar chashash sakana. If it's clear that by withholding that treatment, there's no danger. So now it's an ein bo sakana case. Granted, he needs it. We would normally do it for him. You'd only do it via a non-Jew. That's like the cholesh ein bo sakana. That's your best approach. What about where that's not an option? So then you get this Shulchan Aruch in source number 67, which always confuses people, but now because of our introduction, it will actually be so clear. It will be incredibly clear. Somebody is bedridden, not dangerously ill. The Rama adds, or he has some kind of pain where his whole body feels ill. Sha'az afal pi shaholich knafal b'lemishkav dami. So even if he's walking, nonetheless, he's like he's bedridden. It could be he can physically, like, you know, walk to the bathroom, but that doesn't mean he's fine. He's bedridden. Omrim le'enu Yehudi lasos lo refor. We tell a non-Jew to do it. Aval ein machal and alavas haShabbos beisur do raisa afilu yesh bas sakanas aver. We won't violate Shabbos for them biblically, even with sakanas aver. Ulachal al of Yisrael beisur derabbanan biyadayim. What about for a Jew to do a derabbanan for this person? So he brings you four views. Yesh matir afilu ein bas sakanas aver. Some permit even if it's not a sakanas aver, you can just do a derabbanan straight. That's the Rambam, right? V'yesh omrim shem yesh bo sakanas aver osin v'im ein bo sakanas aver ein osin. Some say you would be allowed to do it for a sakanas aver case, but not without a sakanas aver case, because that's what we saw, that a sakanas aver will justify the Rabbanan. V'yesh omrim shem ein bo sakanas aver osin b'shinui v'im yesh bo sakanas aver osin below shinui. Some say that in the event that there is no sakanas aver, it's just cholish ein bo sakana, then do it with a shinui. That's the Ramban. If there's no sakanas aver, so do your derabanan with a shinoi, and if there's sakanas aver, then no shinoi required. That's Ramban. V'yesh omrim afilu yesh bo sakanas aver ein osin lo davar shu nismach l'malacha de'oraisa udrom she'em esmach malacha osin afilu ein bo sakanas aver. Some say with sakanas aver, the danger to a body part, we won't do anything that is close to a de'oraisa, but we would do derabanans that aren't close to a de'oraisa, taking it as a lower level thing. V'divrei hasvara hashlishis nir'in. And it's the third approach, which is Ramban's approach, that the Shulchan Aruch likes. That's the position of the Ramban, of the Ran, as I noted on the sheet. So my second approach is the approach that says that do a derabanan with a shinui. Clear? However, the Mishneh Berurah brings the view in source number 70. I have a separate point from Rav Schechter on the difference between certain malachos derabanan and gzeiros derabanan, but I think it's just a distraction at this point. But number 70, the Mishneh Berurah says, Al Yidei Yisrael Mutter Davka Al Yidei Shinui. If there's a Jew doing it, you need to do it with the Shinui. Ach HaChaye Adam Masik Shamtim Efsher B'Shinui Mutter Shalom B'Shinui. The Chaye Adam says, if a Shinui isn't possible, then do it without a Shinui. Example, taking medicine on Shabbos. Right? How do you swallow with a Shinui? It's quite the trick. So the answer is, you can't do it with a Shinui, so you do it without a... I think that's difficult. I think it's difficult. I hear the argument to say it. Part of it requires that we get into a real discussion of what is shinoi, which is, you know, something we haven't gotten to. I have given shiurim on what is shinoi. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But I hear the possibility of saying that if someone takes it without water and normally they need water, maybe that could qualify. So the upshot of this is we have our hierarchy of what we do for Chola She'en Bo Sakana. What is Chola She'en Bo Sakana exactly? So we've already seen the sources. You know, I brought more here just to show it to you, but we've already seen the terminology. Source number 71, the Rashba says, look what I put in bold. Choli l'chogufo shel adam. Right? The entire body is ill. Still not dangerously ill. No felamishkov, bedridden. Chola umitstar mimenu. He is ill and in pain. The Ran in source 72. No fel machmas chol yo lemishkov. Falls into bed, is bedridden from this illness. And if you look in 73, that's the Shulchan Aruch. Chola shenofal machmas chol yo lemishkov. He fell into bed. Ve'ein bo sakana. Or the Rama, sheyesh lo mecho shemitstar v'chol yomenu kol gufo. His whole body is ill. Practical examples of this. So the Aruch HaShulchan in source 74 says, mi sheyesh lo mechosh ba'alma. Someone who has a mere ache. Okay, mechush barosh, o b'meyav, o b'lev, v'chayotze bazeh, he has an ache in his head, or his gut, or his heart, and the like. Umischazik v'alech kabari, but he can walk around like a healthy person. He says, you have some people who are weak and they'll have a cough. But they can travel around, they do their business. That's not a chola. That's going to be the non-optimal health category that amuses Rabbi Hochbaum. You can't do anything for them. Even with a non-Jew, out of concern that you might come to grind things. We'll talk more about that, I expect, next week. That's not quite so clear-cut. But the key is his last line. But if someone is weak such that his whole body is weak, he's in pain such that his whole body is weak, and even though he can strengthen himself and walk, when he walks around, you see he's heavy, he's weak. If he's like somebody who is bedridden, now we're talking. So can you give me examples? Actually, I thought I remembered the Aruch HaShulchan had examples, but I don't see any. But that's okay. Nishmas Avram does. Mi sheyesh lo chom, a person has a fever. Shekaragil ein yotzim mipesach habayis machmas machal azu, which normally somebody would not leave the house with that kind of condition. Va'afilu lo nafal amishkav, even if they are not bedridden. Okay? Someone has the sort of thing that they just stay home. Hasovel mikeev chazak, someone who suffers from strong pain. Lo be'aver pnimi, not in an internal aver, like you'd say maybe there's something serious going on. Achneklash kogufo, with such that the whole body is weak. Hamishalak kabari afilo nafal mishkav. Or he says, what if somebody walks around like he's healthy and is not bedridden? Ach yipo lemishkav lo yekabel tipul bizmano. But if he doesn't get treatment, then by the end of Shabbos he will be in bed. And his example is kigon misha sovel mimigrena, like someone who suffers from migraines. So they feel it coming on. They could take something now and stop it, you know, where it is. And if they don't, by the end of Shabbos, they're going to be in Chol HaShem Bo Sakana territory. So that qualifies as Chol HaShem Bo Sakana already now. At this stage, they're already in that category. So someone who has a fever for which people normally stay home, and not fear of contagion stay home, but stay home because they just can't bear to be out among people. They're not strong enough. They don't feel up to it. Somebody who has a migraine. These are people who would be in that category. The students at Stern always want to know, so for fever, like, what's the number? You know, how high does it? But there's no such thing, because it depends on the person's condition. Right? A high fever for one person is a low fever for somebody else. Babies have one, you know, get there. Adults have another. You know, people who are seniors have another. It doesn't work that way. So that's difficult. The other category that fits into this, which we're not going to discuss now, is children qualifying automatically as a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, but it depends on the age. There are different views as to up to what age a child counts as a Chol HaShem Bo Sakana. That's something that we'll have to get to eventually. Ben, Moshe B, I should say, in the chat, you are correct about the Shabbos guy, but it's beyond the scope of right now.